This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Today, we've got something very special. For the last 8 years, my guests have been creating what they call video songs. These are often quirky covers of pop tunes from a wide variety of genres. Anything from the classic Mr. Sandman, made popular by the Cordettes back in the 1950s, all the way up through new hits from artists like Beyoncé and Pharrell Williams. Along the way, they have carved a unique path through the musical world, and it's one that's working. To date, they've amassed over 100 million YouTube views. And to date, they are here with me for a live session on JPR. Jack Conti and Natalie Dawn are the brains behind the band Pomplamoose. Jack, Natalie, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You guys got started making videos that you call video songs. What do you mean by that? What constitutes a video song?
Yeah, the video song was basically an idea for converting audio to video. It's a medium, it's a format where what you see is what you hear. So, you know, a record is always very layered and intricate, and there are a lot of sounds, and it's almost like a magic trick. You don't know how they do it. And the purpose behind the video song is to kind of show you how you do the magic trick. It's music education, if you will. What you see is what you hear, and there's no lip syncing for instruments or voice. So if you see a person singing, that's the actual take that we used in the studio of that person singing. And that way people know that we're not hiding anything or we're not faking vocals. We also wanted to show how music is actually made. When you hear Beyoncé singing her butt off in the studio, she's probably wearing sweatpants. She's not in high heels and a leotard dancing like a maniac.
She probably also doesn't have a profound look on her face. She probably looks really stupid when she's recording vocals, as I do in so many of our videos, just sort of staring blankly ahead of me because I'm working on hitting pitch.
And it's hard. So this was a very, very specific path that you guys decided to take from the outset of making videos, where you are basically pulling back the curtain and showing everything that, that we, the viewer or listener, hears. But yet at the same time, they're incredibly complex, and there's still a bit of magic to it as we all try to figure out exactly how you've done it. How long does it take you on average to set up one of these video shoots?
Gosh.
From concept to completion.
The quickest, 24 hours. We did our cover of Lady Gaga's Telephone. Literally, she released the song and we said, hey, let's cover that. 24 hours later, we were uploading it to YouTube. So it really depends.
The thing about it is that when you're using the same video take that is the audio take, it kind of limits you in terms of how much of a perfectionist you can be. You don't want to have a bunch of takes of video because that's a really big hassle for editing, especially when we weren't recording digitally. When we were using tape, it's just such a pain to be going back on the tape and figuring out which take was the actual vocal take that we did. And so that speeds up the recording process because you can't be a stickler about every note. If you're a little bit off on your delivery, we're not going to redo it because it was good enough.
Yeah.
And we got to move on.
And it's going to be too complicated to punch in and find the right take and blah, blah. So it's actually, that's where the video song came from. Was I had spent 6 months making this record that was 4 songs, and it was so polished and glassy, and every note was meticulously crafted and sculpted. And I put out the record, and nobody wanted it. And then I put out one video song where I did it in like 6 hours. I just spent some time throwing some stuff and showed the video, and it was, you know, you can imagine, it was very, very raw. And I think it was that rawness that made people want the MP3. It was rock and roll. There were notes that were sour, and there were weird things, and it wasn't quite mixed right. And that rawness, I think, is what makes video songs kind of appealing.
How do you guys choose the songs to cover and give the Pomplamoose treatment to?
Well, there are a few criteria for that. First of all, you have to kind of think of it this way. The video songs are really great and they're really fun, but they're mainly just a way for us to tell people about our music. It's kind of like an ad for our music. It's free advertising for our music. So when we put out a video, which takes time to make, the goal is to get views and to get people to find out about our music and to eventually become fans, maybe purchase music, maybe come to our shows. So that's the goal when we're putting out a video. So there are a few things that we keep in mind for that. sometimes we'll just do songs because we really like them. Like Nature Boy, there's really no reason, like that's, when we put out Nature Boy, we weren't thinking this is going to get tons of views because...
Right, the Eden Abbas tune comes from the jazz world, not tons of people know it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Surprised you know the composer.
But then for the most part, like especially when we've been trying to get back into it for this second season of Pomplamoose, we've been putting out lots of popular covers. That said, we don't just cover a song because it's popular. There's a lot of stuff out there that we really don't like that's very popular, and we won't cover it. It has to have something in it that grabs us, either a melody or a bass line, just something that we hear it and we think we can work with that part, and then we're going to reharmonize the hell out of the rest of it and make it ours.
Jack Conte and Natalie Don are my guests, the duo Eden Abbas. Their new album, it's a real one, an actual physical album we'll talk about in a few minutes. It's called Season 2. You can learn all about it at their website, pomplamoose.com, or just search for Pomplamoose on YouTube to find all of these video songs. Obviously, setup for a live session with you two is nearly impossible because of all of the gear that goes into it, but you have graciously allowed us to use some audio from your performance at the Aladdin Theater in Portland, the first stop on your first tour in quite some time. So let's take you out to the stage at the Aladdin for live music from Pomplamoose.
If you guys don't sing on this next one, I am going to be truly disappointed. No, you've already exceeded all of my wildest expectations. So really, I take it back. You're the best. But if you don't sing along, if you think you need some money, well, honey, that's just funny, 'cause I got none. Ain't got no money. If you just want conversation, go somewhere in the nation, not in my house, my house. But if you think you need some loving, ooh, that's fine. 'Cause if you think you need some money, well, you can't have mine. And if you just want conversation, try a pickup line. But if you think you need some loving, ooh, that's fine. If you think you need a drink, you're draining down the sink, well, go take a hike. Ain't got no time for your baggage. If you think you need a fix, don't put me in the mix, just stick to wine. Wine, 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 wine. But if you think you need some loving, ooh, that's fine. 'Cause if you think you need a shrink, and if you think you need a fix, I'm not the fixing kind. But if you think you need some loving, ooh, that's fine.
That is Pomplamoose, live from the Aladdin Theater in Portland on our live session here on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Jack Conte, Natalie Don are joining me today. How did the two of you guys first meet? From what I understand, there was a duo before there was a musical duo.
Yeah, actually, Jack and I have been dating for over 8 years now. We met in college. I was a freshman, Jack was a senior, and he was in a band, and I was opening for his band at a local coffee shop.
And this was where? Stanford?
Yeah, that's right. Jack had done a degree in music and technology, and I was doing art and French literature.
And you spent some time in Europe, right? You kind of grew up in France and Belgium?
Yeah, that's right. So my parents were missionaries, and so we went over there when I was 10, and we spent 3 years in France and 5 years in Belgium, and then when I was 18, came back for college.
That would explain the enunciation on La Vie en Rose, right?
Yeah.
And the name Pamplemousse, I suppose. How did you guys land on that?
Well, we weren't taking things very seriously at all, for one. And a friend of mine came back from doing a study abroad course in Paris and was learning French. And she came back and said that the funniest word that she'd learned while she was in France was the word for grapefruit, pamplemousse. And it just so happened that that very day, Jack and I had had a discussion about maybe giving our collaboration a name. And I said, why don't we call it pamplemousse? And he was like, okay. That was it.
Change the spelling a little bit, right, for American audiences? Or?
Well, yeah, because we don't want people calling it pamplemousse.
Pamplemouse.
Or pamplemouse. That's gross.
Yeah, that sounds like a disease. Yeah.
Was there a specific song that took off for you guys in a way that just blew your minds? Or was it a slow evolution, just bigger and bigger each time out of the gate?
I have trouble answering this question because it was definitely both. It was a slow evolution. We started uploading songs, we got some more hits, then we uploaded another song, we got a lot more hits, and everything was sort of chugging along and really exciting, and we felt growth, right? We felt the band growing. We were getting more and more hits, more and more subscribers, but there was a very clear moment. We uploaded Single Ladies, the Beyoncé cover, and the day after that, Kanye made an ass of himself at the VMAs and stole a mic out of Taylor Swift's hand and said, Beyonce had one of the greatest music videos of all time. And then everybody the next day goes on to YouTube and searches Single Ladies, and up pops Natalie's face and Pamplemousse's cover of Single Ladies. And we got 500,000 views literally in one day. That's when 500,000 views was a lot of views back in 2009.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the next few months, our fan base grew tremendously. We had booked a show. Yeah, we had booked a show at the Brainwash Cafe in San Francisco, which holds like 75 people. It's a laundromat. And we had booked a show 2 weeks before that. When we showed up to the show, again, this is a venue that holds, if you pack it, 75 people. And there were about 200 people inside. We were playing a show. There was literally someone like whose mouth was against our microphone. Like it was people
yes.
were like smashed up against our faces. And there were 200 people outside. Cabs and taxis were swerving. It was like, it was unbelievable. Natalie and I looked at each other. We said, okay, this is like a real thing. This is real.
I don't know if a lot of people know this due to the nature of web discovery. You know, people kind of stumble across and share and other people hear about you and learn about you. But somewhere after that period of time with the Beyoncé single, things got to a degree out of control, out of hand. And you guys actually decided to step away from Pamplemousse for a while, right?
That's right. Yeah. It's not the, I feel like it's not the poetic story that people want to hear. They kind of just want it to end at like, and then we put out this video and our fan base quintupled and then everything was amazing forever. But the truth of the matter is we had come into this whole partnership, this collaboration with a nonchalant approach of having fun and spending time together. And when it became so much about the business of making music and hiring managers and
God, it got
you
so
know
complicated.
You've got to now you've got to do this in your sophomore album, it has to be so, you know, it has to just blow everyone out of the water, and we were just getting all of this input suddenly from all of these people who we'd never known before and like going to LA and talking to people.
Yeah, I think the problem was we were young and we didn't have really an advisor that we could trust, and we wanted to stay independent, so we said no to major label deals and to publishing deals. So we didn't
Great move, by the way. We don't regret that.
No. I mean, that was the best thing we ever did.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad we did
Actually,
that.
Actually, technically one of the best things we ever did was the first person who's still kind of an advisor to us. The first person who we hired who still works with us very closely is our lawyer, Kia Cameron, and he advised us in the very beginning. He said, all of these major labels, they're coming to you, and they were. All of the major labels were sort of throwing proposals at us, and he said, you don't want to do this right now, because I've seen what happens when you put out a hit and the labels come in and they snatch you up and then you're dead, you know. And so he kind of saved us early on, and
yeah,
so we got lucky with some people, and we've since then been able to like continue surrounding ourselves with really smart people.
Jack Conte and Natalie Dawn are my guests live on Jefferson Public Radio, the duo Pomplamoose. Let's take you back out to the stage at the Aladdin Theater for more live music from Pomplamoose. That is Pomplamoose live from the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Jack Conte, Natalie Donner, my guests today on a live session here on Jefferson Public Radio. We will have audio from today's session and some photos from their show at the Aladdin up on our website at ijpr.org. Speaking of the show at the Aladdin, you guys don't actually tour all that much. It's been a while since you have been out. This one's going to be a big one, though.
Yeah, so I think what a lot of people don't realize, I think common opinion is that bands don't make money on record sales, they make money on touring. And that is true for signed acts, because signed acts, all their record sales go back to the label, and then the only income that they have is from touring. We're precisely the opposite. All of our money comes from record sales, because we own 100% of our masters. And touring is an extremely expensive endeavor for us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this tour, we'll probably share these numbers at some point, but this tour is costing Pomplamoose upwards of $90,000. Now, we'll recoup a lot of that in sales and merchandise and things on the road. And we don't have tour support, right? We don't have a label who's fronting that money. So Pomplamoose has to come up with that money somehow. It's a very, very difficult proposition. Touring is hard. Natalie spent months of her life being full-time manager for Pomplamoose, putting this whole tour together.
You guys expand to a six-piece as you're out on the road in order to accomplish all the things that you can do in your studio with overdubbing and multi-tracking and things. Was it hard for the two of you to give up some control of the sound of the band to others on stage?
For me, it was a pleasure, because I feel like I've been on some tours where the chemistry hasn't been ideal, and with this tour, I feel like we found people who are just not just amazing musicians, but just so great to be around. They're like really wonderful people, and it's a pleasure to be on stage with them.
They're all better musicians than we are.
Oh,
so
my gosh,
it's very easy
far.
To give them the parts. We say, yeah. Here's your part. They play it better than we could ever play it. It really is amazing playing with people who are better than you.
Yeah, in the videos, you guys very much put off a bit of a yin-yang in terms of characteristics and energy level. It comes through even more on stage. Was that something that has developed the longer you two have been together as a couple?
I think we are just kind of yin-yang.
That's what it's like.
We're not
super
like
low-key.
Putting it on for shows.
And Jack, you're not low-key.
I am not low-key.
That is
yeah.
You crowd surfed.
I crowd surfed. Yeah.
Some sort of worm thing on the ground.
I did a worm on the ground. I freaked out. Yeah, I mean, I guess in our lives, like, you know, at midnight, I'm wanting to shoot four more scenes for our next music video, and Natalie's like, Jack, like, we have tomorrow. Let's go to bed. And I'm like, no, we have to shoot the music video.
And then I'm like, don't you want popcorn? And maybe we could watch some 30 Rock? And then he's like, okay.
Why do you think people gravitate towards your music? I mean, both fans, but also advertising representatives, they gravitate toward your sound. Why do you think that is?
I don't think Natalie would say this, but I think most of it has to do with Natalie's voice, I think. And
You're right, I wouldn't say that.
No, you wouldn't. But, you know, it's funny, when you study music, you know, why people like music, most of it has to do with the lead vocal. And I think Natalie's voice is, she has what I call insta-fan syndrome. I remember seeing her play at Stanford outside a little coffee shop, and people would be walking by, and then you'd see their face as they heard something, and they'd look around for it, and then they'd see her, and then they just were zombies. It was like they were instantly fans. They would just sit down right where they were and just listen to her for hours. And I think Natalie's vocal is just, she just has a wonderful voice. That would be my opinion.
I don't remember that happening.
He must have been stalking you for a while. I mentioned earlier season two. You have finally released an actual physical record. What was the decision there?
So we have something to sell on tour.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
We would not have put out a physical product if we weren't touring.
True. Not those little download cards that you sell for a buck here or there.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The other thing I want to ask you guys about, because I don't think we've ever had an artist in for a live session that has used this tool. We have a lot of folks that do Kickstarter. Tell me about Patreon and how it works and how it has worked for the two of you.
So Patreon allows fans to support artists on a recurring basis instead of a single one-off, like $50 for a new album or $100 for, you know, for me to write a book or whatever it is. Patreon is for artists who are coming out with things on a regular basis. So, hey, I'm making videos, I'm writing blogs, I'm making webcomics every day. It allows a creator to basically have a salary, you know, that's provided by their fans. So fans can pledge $1 per month, or they can pledge $2 per video, per thing that the creator releases. So Pomplamoose has a per video Patreon campaign. We get $1 or $2 or sometimes 10 or sometimes 50 from our generous fans every time we release a video.
So it's sort of like micro hiring you for your future product.
Yeah, it's not a sale because the videos are free to everyone. It really is patronage. It's how all the great art that we've ever known has ever been made. I mean, any piece of art that you've ever studied in school was made because some rich person was like, hey, you make cool stuff. Here's a bag of coins. Go make more cool stuff. That's literally it. I mean, and so this is patronage V2, right? It's diffused among a crowd of people instead of one rich dude.
Right. And here we are in an era where you can now hand a bag of Bitcoins.
Right, exactly.
Jack Conti, Natalie Don are Pomplamoose. They are my guests live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Guys, thanks so much for taking time to talk with me.
Hey, thank you.
It's been a pleasure to meet you. We're going to take you out to the Aladdin Theater for one more live track from Pomplamoose here on Jefferson Public Radio.
Qui se perd sur sa bouche. Voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas. Je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. Sans en moi mon cœur qui bat.
Should we do a second verse?
Yes.
I mean, they're still here.
Des nuits d'amour a pu finir. Un grand bonheur qui prend sa place, des ennuis, des chagrins trépassent, heureux, heureux à en mourir. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré pour la vie. Sans en moi, mon cœur qui bat.
That is Pomplamoose live on Jefferson Public Radio from the stage of the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Jack Conte, Natalie Don are my guests. Guys, thanks again for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.